Today's program is brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Visit Michter's.com to find out how their taste is everything, cost be damned attitude is creating some of the finest whiskeys available.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm not Joe Campanelli. I am a guest host today, Jack Inslee, and I'm with Jory Morales, the producer of the show as well. And we have a very special guest in studio today. You may recognize him from In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. He's also the executive beverage director for Epicurean Group, which manages the wonderful New York City restaurants Dell'Anima, L'Artusi, La Piccio, and Anfora. He is a certified sommelier, wine specialist, wine educator, featured on many 30 under 30 lists, and plenty of other accolades we will get into. It's none other than Joe Campanelli. Hey, Joe.
It's an honor to be here in the studio with you today.
Did you ever think you'd make it on In the Drink?
I never thought this day would come. You know, they need to start opening it up to 40 under 40 lists now because I no longer qualify.
Once upon a time.
That's hilarious. Joe, I think that you do an amazing job every week talking to different guests, exploring their different philosophies, their tactics, whatever have you. I don't think enough people out there actually get to talk to you on a one-on-one basis and actually figure out or understand like your backstory. You actually didn't start off studying wine. You started off in European studies, right? At NYU?
Yeah, that's right. I studied European studies. So I kind of always knew that I was really interested in history and culture and even geography. Those were all things that interested me. And I thought that I wanted to go into politics. I had I felt that at the time I could make an impact, and that was really important to me. And I thought that I could do that by going into politics. And for some reason in my mind, the way to politics was to go to law school and then to have this political career. I guess as I grew up, the more I found out about politicians, the less I wanted to hang out with them.
Yeah, you're a little too honest. You're a little too honest
and,
with politics.
And just going to school in New York City and being exposed to things like farmers markets, great retail stores like Dean and DeLuca Restaurant Week was huge for me. I can eat at great restaurants for $20, and that blew my mind. And I knew pretty quickly after I started NYU that going into law was not the appropriate thing for me.
Oh wow! So I know you studied overseas in Madrid and Florence. Was that through the European Studies course, or was that when you already made your change?
Yeah, so that was through. So European Studies was a major that required you to study abroad and do advanced language. Luckily, I was doing Spanish at the time, which going into restaurants proved to be a useful skill. But it was really Italy that I fell in love with. Okay. And when I came back from Italy, that's when I had this in my head, this mandate that there's no way, like, I need to surround myself with food and wine, and that's how I want to spend the rest of my working life.
You went over to Italy, fell in love with the culture, and came back to the States and just wanted to immerse yourself in it.
That's right. And right when I got back, I walked into Italian wine merchants, and I bought the least expensive bottle of, or the second least expensive bottle of wine there. And it was, I remember what it was. It was Fiuti di San Gregorio Rubrato. It was maybe $13 or $14. And they treated, they were very patient with my questions. I was really enthusiastic, and they took a dumbwaiter down to the cellar, brought back this very inexpensive bottle of wine out of the cellar at cellar temperature, presented to me, wrapped it up beautifully, and put it in this really nice bag, like as if I had, you know, gone shopping on Madison Avenue or something. And I felt great about it. And as I was walking out, I turned around and said, you know what, I love this place. I wanted to be here more often. And I don't know where I got the cojones, but I just went up to the manager there. I was like, would you hire me? I'll work for free. I wish I hadn't blurred out the second part, but so I did an internship there, which then evolved into a job.
Right, and the internship, as we know, that's where you met August Cardona, your future business partner, correct?
That's right. So at the time, August was he was my boss there, and it was great working with him. After I left Italian Wine Merchants, I went off. He stayed at Italian Wine Merchants, and now we work together. Now I'm his boss, so the tables have changed. don't tell him I said that.
No. We're getting a little ahead of ourselves. I want to rewind a little bit. Going into when you first started working in kind of like the food world, it wasn't front of the house. You actually started off in the kitchen at Union Square Cafe, right?
That's right. So I knew that I loved food and I wanted to be around food. At this time, I was dabbling with the idea of working in the food industry. This was before I went to Florence. And I convinced Union Square Cafe to let me do this kitchen internship. And probably one of the greatest kitchens in New York City. I found it. I was interested because in Zagat, I was really into my Zagat guide at the time. It said that this was the most favorite restaurant, the most loved restaurant by New Yorkers. And so to me, that was even more powerful than the best or the greatest. Right. And so I went in for lunch, and I had the same kind of just really forward. I don't think that I'm the most forward person in the world, but the same kind of thing happened as at Italian Wine Merchants. I saw the pastry chef, and her name was Emily Isaac, and I went right up to her and I was like, man, I love this meal. I absolutely loved dessert, especially the caramelized banana tart was like the most incredible thing I've ever had.
Right.
And would you think about taking me on as an intern? And so, well, first of all, all the desserts on the menu are mine, except caramelized banana tart's been on the menu since we opened, and that is not my dessert at all. But glad you liked it. And second of all, I have to talk to Mike Romano, the executive chef, and I was able to convince them somehow without any experience other than being someone who was cooking at home to bring me on. And this is in a Danny Meyer kitchen. It's definitely a great environment, but it wasn't what I loved about food. I came to realize quickly, in a professional kitchen, what happens is you have your station and you're making the same 5, 6, 7 dishes all night long,
over and over again,
Right. It's very hot. I sweat a lot, so I don't like that. I don't like the heat. And the only feedback that you get from the dining room is when, and generally, is when something is overcooked or undercooked or oversalted or undersalted or something like that. And so you can picture why a lot of chefs get a reputation of being crazy, right? Because they're working harder than anyone in the front of house, for sure.
Hands down.
They're more skilled.
Hands down.
They've gone through years and years of training, and then
for less pay at that, crazy hours for less pay.
And then then the dish could be cooked absolutely perfectly, but someone doesn't like the way it's cooked, and that's all they hear. And they don't hear the 99 other times that
it's amazing or
that's
awesome.
Amazing. And I like the instant feedback. I like hearing I'm doing a good job and that people are having a good time. So when I worked my way back into the front of house later at Babbo, I realized that instant gratification, seeing people having a good time, enjoying their experience. That's what I crave.
The interpersonal connection, being able to go ahead and build those bridges and actually talk to your guests and help guide them towards a wine that's going to help enhance their experience and their meal.
Yes. And, and I started to realize, I think really at when I was at Babbo and we get these guests in who were, tourists, or maybe they were young and this wasn't the kind of meal that they can have all the time. This was a very, very special, maybe once a year sort of meal. And I felt a lot of responsibility for that. And to see the delight on their face, that was my favorite experience. And then I realized that's what it wasn't just food that I liked. It was the the experience and the being able to show hospitality through food. Because a perfectly cooked thing on a plate by yourself is just kind of sad and lonely. It's nice, but it's not, you know, it's not as good as sharing that with someone. And then for me, especially if I'm part of the other person having a really great time. So, so that's when I started to realize, well, this is where I want to be in food. I want to be part of using food as a tool to show people a good time.
How did you get the job at Babbo?
Yeah.
How to get the job at Babbo? They must have been desperate. I had just turned 23. I had never been a professional sommelier before. This is at the time the greatest Italian wine list in New York City. I was in the food studies master's program, and I had done all of these wine certifications, like an absurd amount, like everyone in New York City. Pretty much. I had done the certified wine educator, diploma in wine spirit through Wine Spirit Education Trust, certified sommelier from Court of Master Sommeliers. I'd done all these by the time I was 23, and I did spirit certifications and all this. So I was just really into learning everything I could learn about wines and spirits. And I had read David Lynch's book, Vino Italiano. Back and forth, and had earmarked it and underlined it, and mine was all tattered. And so I was really just diving into it. And I think that they saw that kind of enthusiasm. And I was in the food studies master's program. I was really enthusiastic about it. And hopefully I think that's what made up for my lack of experience. So that's how. But that was tough. Yeah, I mean, it was definitely my connection from Italian wine merchants. So, you know, stay in touch with your former employers, leave on a good note. But that's how, because at that time, Mario Batali and Joe Bastianich were partners in Italian wine merchants. Right. They aren't anymore, but they were at that time. And there was a lot of overlap with wine dinners. And
I had no clue that they actually were partners in Italian wine merchants. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty amazing. I don't know what's it, but now it's Sergio Esposito and his brother it's grown beyond what anyone could have I think imagined. But when I think back now as to the wines that were being poured in 2004, 2005 at Italian wine merchants that you didn't really see around, that people kind of just take for granted as great Italian wines, like Giuseppe Quintarelli, right. Bartolo Mascarello. Bartolo Mascarello has been around for a while, and people recognize his quality. But Damian Podvarisic and Grosvenor, like these wines were not really around the city. They're Italian wine merchants really put a lot of these really great Italian wines on the map. And I think now if someone opens up an all-Italian wine store, you're like, oh, that's cool. But in 2001 or whenever Italian wine merchants opened, 2002, to open up an all-Italian high-end wine boutique was revolutionary. People weren't thinking of Italian wines, especially Italian white wines,
right,
being on the same level as
the reds, the bold reds that everyone loves.
Right.
What are the biggest challenges in trying to get some of those smaller grower-producer wines from Italy over to the States for distribution or in the restaurants?
It seems these days that there isn't much of a challenge getting them over here. It seems like we're very fortunate in New York City to have so much wine available to us. The challenge for me as a buyer is to not get overexcited as to all of these great wines that are coming and try to remain true to the wines that I know and that I love and kind of cycle new ones in a controlled way, because there's something like 30,000-40,000 different wine SKUs that, wow, we have available in New York, many of them Italian, and hundreds of distributors and a bunch of like new small guy distributors, right, who you just want, like, you're like, you're an awesome, nice guy, you have a small book, like, I want to work with you, you're awesome, but I already have like 30 different distributors that I already have that experience right, with. Right. And some of them we've had really, really long relationships with.
Right.
So that you have to kind of create that balance.
And then you have the challenge too of you're towing that line of how do I go ahead and show my love for certain regions? I want to highlight certain producers at the same time without taking away from your own integrity. You have to go ahead and appeal to the guests and your clientele. Mm-hmm. How do you balance that?
Yeah, I mean, that's tough because, you know, you're putting together a list for your guests, not for yourself. I really do believe that if we put together a list of wines that we believe in, and I work really closely with the assistant beverage directors at the restaurants, we created a wine list mission statement for each of the wine lists. And
it's true. It's posted up in our wine room.
and so all of the wines have to kind of fit into that mission statement. And we talk about it, you know, if they don't. But I think that if we stay true to the wines that we love, our guests are really going to like them as well. I don't think that any of our tastes are so esoteric that guests aren't going to like them, but it's more about choosing wines that are made with integrity, are made with a connection to the place that they come from.
So guys, I think it's a great natural spot to take a break here, and we'll find out after the break how you end up opening your own spots. This is In the Drink with guest Joe Campanelli. We will be right back after a quick break.
Michter's Distillery is a proud sponsor of In the Drink and HeritageRadioNetwork.org. At Michter's, our passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. When you only make small batch and single barrel whiskeys like Michter's does, your whiskey has to be perfect. No detail is too small, from careful attention to the wood used in the construction of our barrels, to lower barrel entry proof before heat cycled aging in advance of exacting chill filtration. And no whiskey gets bottled until Michter's master distiller says it's just right. Michter's cost be damned, taste is everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. Is it worth it? A lot of spirits lovers seem to think so. Food and Wine magazine called Michter's the best American whiskey. Bon Appetit said it's amazing. And the Wall Street Journal had one special word for Michter's: phenomenal. For more information, visit Michter's.com. Or simply visit your favorite bartender or retailer and ask for Michter's.
We are back. I don't know whose wonderful voice that was on the ad, but thank you for promoting Michter's, and thank you to Michter's for supporting the show. We are here with Joe Campanelli, and we're going through his sort of career trajectory, life story. And we left off with you as the sommelier at Babbo. Now, how do we get to you opening Del Animo with August Cardona and Catherine Thompson?
Yeah, you know, I really feel like I stepped in shit when when I opened Del Animo, because it's not the story of how people typically open up restaurants. I was really fortunate that I was working at Babbo, and one of August's friends came to him with this space, wanting to open up a restaurant with August. And at the time, August was the director of operations over at Italian Wine Merchants, and he said that he wasn't for whatever reason ready to leave Italian Wine Merchants, but he would get into opening up this restaurant if he could convince me to leave my job at Babbo and open the restaurant with him. And you know, I was 23 years old, and I was offered ownership in a restaurant. And so how often does that opportunity come by? So I was like, yes, absolutely. Sign me up. Let's go. absolutely scared out of my mind. I had no idea what I was getting into. It's even scarier now to me to think back on what I didn't know. I'm glad that, you know, that I didn't know how treacherous it was going to be. But we made it through. We made it through that first year. It didn't burn the restaurant down. And this October is going to be seven-year anniversary of Del Anima.
Well, you jump right into a second restaurant, like, you know, right after that first year. How did that happen?
I think none of us really expected it to be as well received as it was. We just wanted to open up a great neighborhood restaurant. I wanted to put on wines that were special to me that I really loved, and kind of surprise people with having a little bit of a bigger, better, well thought out list than you might expect in a tiny little 40 seat restaurant. And Gabe's food was just outstanding from the beginning. We had a really special opening team. Still friends with most of them today. And we by the spring, we opened in October. By the spring, we were turning away more people than we were sitting every night. And we realized that we just needed a few more seats, and we couldn't expand Del Anima. We needed a few more seats. So we started looking for another restaurant space. And luckily, we didn't have to look very far. The first place that we looked at was Cesare Casella's former restaurant, Marema. And I know many people have actually looked at that space before us, or while we were looking at it, and kind of passed it up because it's in the middle of the block. It's across the street from a police precinct, which, as you know, Joy at Lartuzzi, you can see those lights go off several times a night. It has a tiny little frontage, so you could pass by it 100 times and never see it. And then on that block, there's nothing else open after 7 o'clock at night. So all of the traditional metrics of restaurant real estate kind of didn't really add up. There's not good foot traffic there. You know, it didn't really add up for that space. But we liked it. We liked the way it kind of unfolded as you walk through it, like this little jewel box, and the upstairs are these great skylights. And I saw right away where I wanted to put my wine cellar. It was so clear to me how I could build this like beautiful wine cellar upstairs. And the rent was still under market for back then, and that the neighborhood is just exploded. So that was Lartuzzi, a year and a couple months after Del Anima. However, you know, Lartuzzi did open in December of 2008, which was kind of the doldrums of the economy when all those bankers kind of ran the global economy into the ground. But so that made things really scary. Yeah. But now Lartuzzi is, again, it's also like busier than we ever would have thought that it could be. And we're so thankful for that. It's been a really great run. We just had our 5-year anniversary at Lartuzzi, and I guess that was last year.
Yeah.
And we had 11 people who were part of the opening team at Lartuzzi are still working there.
Amazing. One more question on the restaurants. Talk me through the names. What do the names mean?
Oh my God. This is a sore subject. So we have Del Anima, Lartuzzi, Lapicho, and Anfora. Our names are so hard to pronounce. I think the next restaurant we open, we're going to call Bob.
Just apostrophe. Just an
Bob.
Apostrophe.
Eat at Joe's or something.
Eat at Joe's. Joe's. Like eat at Joe's. Drink at Joe's.
So Del Anima is the easy one. It means from the soul. I think it's very pretty. We try to have the name as just a check that for us, make sure that everything we do has honesty and integrity and is real and has some soul in it. Anfora, I guess, is the second easiest one. Anfora is named after this ancient vessel that was a terracotta clay pot used for wine vinification and maturation and transportation. They use different ones for each, and these vessels are having a comeback in the albeit a very, very small one, but they're having a comeback in the wine world, and I'm super interested in these kind of wines. And then Lartuzzi was named after Pellegrino Artuzzi. He was a silk merchant who is also an epicure, and he would travel all over the boot of Italy to sell his fine silks. And he collected recipes from all over Italy and compiled them in a book. It was the first book ever to have recipes from many different regions like that. And it's kind of become the joy of cooking of Italy. And people have very old copies and hand them down. And it's still the most important book in cookbook in Italy. The full name is Scienza nella cucina e l'arte di mangiar bene, but everyone, such a mouthful, even for Italians who speak with mouthfuls often, people just colloquially refer to it as Lartuzzi or the Artuzzi book. And then Lepicio is named after Apicius, who was a Roman chef. And he was really unique because he was this really revered chef, and at a time when cooks were considered to be peasants, or are oftentimes they were slaves, but he was considered to have really great talent, and some of his recipes were written down, again at a time when recipes weren't really written down. Fast forward to the 18th century, there was a cookbook that was dedicated to Apicius that was called Lepicio, and it was the first book to ever have a red tomato sauce in it, because in ancient Roman times, there were no tomatoes in Italy. And not that we are a red sauce joint, though Gabe makes a really tasty, tomato sauce, certainly with lots of chili flake and
a lot of chili flake. Gabe loves the spice,
but we really just love that story.
That's so funny.
Great stories.
Thanks.
Did you ever experience anybody kind of like giving you how would I put this? As such a young guy opening restaurants, did you experience doubt or people like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing? Or I mean,
you know, I felt a tiny tinge of that, and maybe that was my own just personal unsureness of myself. However, this industry is amazing, and for the most part that didn't really exist at all. People were super helpful, really supportive. Whoever I asked, I asked a ton of people for whether it was, you know, a beer vendor or someone to clean hoods or whoever it was, people were super supportive, and I didn't feel much competition, and I didn't feel much of that at all. So no, it's really amazing, and it's something that we try to do to kind of go over the top to help out any other restaurant that would ask for help, because we've certainly felt that over the years.
Oh, nice. So I have to ask, I know that you used to do food writings, you used to maybe even entertain the idea of becoming a food writer. You, Gabe, and Catherine are now lucky enough to actually have your own cookbook. And I don't know of any cookbook before that's actually paired wines and beverages with the recipes. I'm told that you did such in the book. Is that right? You want to tell us about it? Or?
That's thank you for asking, Jory. I really appreciate it. You're really good at this, man. Maybe you want to take over the next few weeks, by the way. yeah, that's right. So our cookbook, Downtown Italian, comes out next Tuesday. You can pre-order on Amazon. And it is a collection of the recipes from our last 7 years of working together, of me. Gabe is the executive chef of the restaurant. Catherine is the pastry chef. They're my business partners. And it's recipes from all three of the restaurants over the last 7 years. And my contribution to the book is I have a chapter on our cocktails in the beginning, and on aperitifs in general, and then a digestif chapter at the end, and then wine and beverage pairings all throughout for each one of their recipes. So I'm happy the way it worked out, and it's you can easily put together. The recipes work really, really well at home. I cooked a bunch of them with my girlfriend Alyssa a few weeks ago, and her mom, and they're just really easy to cook at home, and the pairings are all throughout. So thank you for bringing it up, and we're just super excited. It's just crazy how long of a process it takes. It's been like 2 years, but I can't believe that it's finally coming out.
And you've been in a relationship with Gabe and Catherine for 7 years.
7 years.
That's crazy.
Yeah, when we started, so just going back to that story, I think it's kind of a cool story. So Catherine was the chef and the private events person at Italian Wine Merchants when we were there, and worked with me in August. When we opened Del Anima, reached out to Catherine to say, she was in between jobs. Can you help us get this open? August had his full-time job. I was super inexperienced. Like, we needed someone who actually knew what they were doing. And, I still think that other than maybe our director of operations, Heather Morgan, Catherine is the most talented person I know in the restaurant industry. Like, she is amazing.
Hands down.
And she can be executive chef, pastry chef, or general manager.
She's actually classically trained.
That's right. Yeah. She was a valedictorian in CIA. So she's like, she knows her shit. So we reached out to Catherine to help out, and to say, choose in between jobs. The main thing we needed was to hire a chef. Right. And neither August nor I were really qualified to hire a chef. And Catherine said, I just started dating this guy a couple months ago. He's an awesome chef. You should do it. And we were really skeptical at first because Katie was our close friend. And what if we had to fire her boyfriend? Yeah. That would have sucked.
Gabe must have cooked her something really amazing for her to vouch for him after just 2 months.
It was just a few months. Yeah. and we met Gabe, and it was, we could tell not only was his food amazing, but this is a guy that we wanted to work with. Just an infectious personality. He takes his job really seriously, but is also a lot of fun.
He's a fun, quirky guy.
Yeah, he's the man. So now they're married. They have two babies, and they're partners in the restaurants. And then we worked on this cookbook together. It's all kind of come full circle.
I'm going to go on record and thank Italian Wine Merchants right now for giving me August Cardona, Catherine Thompson, Gabe Thompson, and Joe Campanelli and a family to work for with Epicurean Group. I think you do a great job staying hungry and thirsty for knowledge and wanting to take everything that you learn and spread it, because I think that's one of the best things about this industry is you can actually taste the love literally in food and beverage.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm honored to be working in the restaurant industry. I think it's the greatest industry. It's just filled with supportive, amazing, talented, hardworking people. It's fun to go to work every day. And Jory, thanks for jumping in the seat. You guys can visit Jory at Lartuzzi most nights as well. thank you for holding it down behind the bar there too, as well as holding it down in the interviewer seat.
Yeah, I'm glad we made this happen, guys. We have to end the show with a wine of the week segment, though. So I'm going to have to ask both Jory and Joe what their wine of the week has been.
Wow. Okay. So I kind of know mine. We've been doing these wine dinners at Le Picho with New York Vintners, which has this other super interconnected with the Italian Wine Merchant story. It's two guys who worked at New York Vintners spun off and opened up New York Vintners, one of them being Catherine's cousin. Very connected. We love New York Vintners. So we've been doing these dinners with them. Last night we did a super Tuscan dinner. And as you know, we don't talk about super Tuscans a lot on this show. Tend to not. I'm not predisposed to certainly love wines made with Cabernet and Merlot in Italy. The wines were absolutely beautiful. In the 1990 Castello di Rampolla San Marco, which is, it's an estate that I visited recently in Panzano, right across from Fontodi, which is, it's a winery on all of our lists, one of my favorites. That was just absolutely beautiful. Like, just this extraordinarily, exciting wine that was kind of towing the line between still having all of its really pretty ripe fruit and then really getting into some of that Panzano minerality and earthiness and ruggedness. So, That wine was extraordinary. And yeah, so we'll have four more of these New York Vintners dinners too, if you guys want to come. And it's really fun because we get to, we taste like 12 or 13 different wines, over the course of a dinner. How about you, Jory? What do you got after?
a jug of Charles Rossi. No, I didn't really drink a lot of wine this week. I did though try, a beer, Saranac. I've never really tried anything from their brewery before. I was upstate enjoying some foliage, nice. And just tried their Oktoberfest. Really nice and crisp, like 5.4% ABV, like 20 IBUs. Nice session beer. Nothing too light, fall friendly. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. All right.
I had a...
what do you have, Jack? Yeah. I had a really... Have you been sipping that Moet Ice some more?
That was a few weeks ago. I did finish the Ice Imperial, though. No, I had a nice Baronfini Pinot Gris last night, and that's about it. Yeah, well, anyway, we managed to seamlessly promote a book and an event in an interview, so I feel like we've done our job behind the mic. Joe, thanks so much for doing this, agreeing to this, and Jory, great job jumping in there. In the interview seat. So we will see you guys next week on In the Drink.
Wow, thank you guys.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.